My clock says that it's 8:30 a.m., so I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission on February 22nd, 2019. I'll go through and we'll see who's on for commissioners. This is Barbara Baker. Is Commissioner Carpenter on the phone?
I'm present, thank you.
How about Kehoe?
Yeah, I'm here, thank you. Good morning. Sure.
Holtzmiller? Not yet. Commissioner Thorburn?
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back.
Commissioner Graybill?
Here.
Okay. Commissioner McIsaac?
Here.
And Commissioner Smith?
Present and ready.
Okay, it appears that we have a quorum. I'm not sure if Commissioner Holtzmiller is planning on joining us, but I guess we will just see about that. Director Suslin, do you mind telling us which staff are on the call today?
Sure. We have Amy Windrop, Mick Cope, Chad Herring, Ron Warren, and Bill Freimeyer's here.
Good deal. Well, is there anything that we need to think about before we launch into our agenda? Anybody have opening questions, concerns, or comments? All right. Hearing none, let's go to agenda item A, which is a staff update on Skagit Elk, and it's a briefing.
Okay, thank you, Vice Chair and Chair and Commission members. Mick Cope and I are going to walk through this. I'll give sort of the overview, and Mick will throw in some color commentary as he sees fit. I'm going to back up a little bit in the presentation to give a little bit of a history of this elk herd and how we got to where we are today so that commissioners have some context. Essentially, the North Cascade elk herd, it has a current population of about 600. Our population objective, as described in the elk herd plan, is between 1,700 and 2,000. This herd has had a history since sort of settlement, swinging wildly from being large and being extirpated and being large and being extirpated. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. In 1984, we had just a few hundred, or excuse me, in 1984, we had around 1,400 to 2,000 elk in this elk herd. And by the late 1990s, we only had a few hundred. The elk herd stretches from I-90 up to the border with Canada. In the 1990s, we continued a process of population augmentations, and the current population is expanding. There is a long history of augmentations in this herd. The elk were extirpated in the Skagit, starting with settlement. In 1912, 46 elk were brought in from Montana. In 1946, 9 were brought in from King County and 6 from Yakima. In 1948, 8 more were brought in from Yakima County. 2003 and 2004 saw about 50 elk brought in from Mount St. Helens. And in 2005, an additional 51 were brought in from Mount St. Helens. The elk are a treaty resource, and we co-manage the elk with the Point Elliott Treaty Tribes. There are 9 tribes. The Point Elliott Treaty was signed in 1855, and the treaty states that the right of taking fish at all usual and accustomed grounds and stations is further secured to said Indians in common with the citizens of the territory, together with the privilege of hunting, gathering roots and berries, and pasturing the horses on open and unclaimed lands. The Point Elliott Treaty Tribes have reserved their right to continue traditional activities on lands beyond their reserved lands. In recognition of the Point Elliott Treaty, we did enter into a co-management agreement in 2013 with the Point Elliott Treaty Tribes. The purpose, there's essentially 4 purposes. The first is to provide a cooperative and coordinated science-based approach to management in recognition of the shared resource. To promote joint efforts to increase access to private industrial timberlands, promote communication, and to provide a process to resolve and avoid conflict. The co-management elements, it's not a particularly large document, and you can actually find it on our website on the hunting tab. Under the hunting tab, there's something called treaty, tribal hunting, and you can actually read the document if you're interested. It's there. The co-management elements include enforcement, the development of regulations for harvest reporting, science and data gathering, and provisions around damage hunts. As co-managers, we meet multiple times a year at the policy level. There's also a technical level that meets multiple times a year. We set seasons, we address issues of equity, and we coordinate on enforcement. We also work together on damage issues. Tribes have assisted with providing fencing and hazing, help with hunting, with inviting the property owners. So now let's get into the agricultural conflicts, which I think is sort of the nugget of this conversation. In 1999, an elk area was created in the bottom of the Skagit Valley to address damage issues. Elk areas are essentially areas on the map where we have more tools to deal with damage issues. It allows us more flexibility. In 2003, we expanded the boundary, and we also created general season for archery and muzzleloader. In 2010, 2013, we limited that to master hunter and antlerless harvest on the valley floor. And in 2015 to present, we have a system where it's permit only for master hunters, youth, hunters with disabilities, and seniors in that elk conflict zone. We estimate that right now there are between 300 and 500 elk on the valley floor. Historically, the agricultural conflict was managed by the enforcement program between 2005 and 2011. In about 2013, there was a significant number of kill permits given out, about 100 plus, which impacted the herd pretty substantially. 2013 to present, it's now managed by the conflict program under the wildlife program. And in the last few years, the number of damage permits have increased each year. I'd like to give you a couple of numbers, and it's a table, which I know you can't see. So if you have a pen and paper handy, I'll give you some numbers, and we can talk about what it means. So I have some numbers from 2016, 2017, and 2018. In 2016, we had recorded 52 damage complaints. In 2017, we had 78 damage complaints. And in 2018, we had 61 damage complaints. The next line in the table says damage permits issued. So this is the department trying to respond to those damage complaints. In 2016, there were 40 damage permits issued. In 2017, there were 52 permits issued. And in 2018, there were 60 permits issued. Then the last line of the table is the number of those permits that actually resulted in harvest. So this is landowner damage harvest. In 2016, it was 24. In 2017, it was 34. And in 2018, it was 27. And what you can see in the table is that we see a fairly steady level of damage complaints, a slight uptick. We see that we have responded by increasing the number of damage permits each year. And in addition to this is just damage permits, but we're also increasing over this time period our focus on fencing and hazing and non-lethal methods. And then the interesting line is the number of harvested animals, which you can see is pretty stable over that time period.
Just to tie the end of that bit a little bit, Amy, just to kind of make sure everybody's on the same page, that these permits are permits that specialists provide to landowners who we have an agreement with to help them with proactive non-lethal deterrence and kind of hazing kind of activities, but also these are lethal removal permits that we give landowners that they can either exercise themselves or give to somebody that they want to take the elk if they don't want to do that themselves. So these are not general. These aren't going to hunters. They're not part of our permits that we have for recreational or master hunter permits. These are separate from that.
That's right. And the other piece is that the damage permits, we can give property owners more than one of them. So I just want to be clear about that because we've heard a lot from the community that we only get to have one. That is not the case. What they need is what we try to provide them. Okay. So now let's talk about what we've done the last 18 months. Over the last 18 months, we have, as you can tell by the graphic or the table, we've tried to increase the number of damage permits that are out on the ground. We don't have control over folks using those damage permits, but we are trying to increase them out on the ground so that folks have what they need when they need them. We've increased the amount of communication with the ag community. We've met maybe 5 to 7 times last year, and we held a conference call a little while ago. We try to stay in pretty constant contact with the ag community. We've been working with legislators on improving the situation. Representative Dent and Representative Eslick actually came up to the Skagit and held a meeting about how we could improve the situation on the ground through legislation. That's right. And Representative Lekeniff and Senator Wagoner and Representative Sutherland as well. We've also been working with landowners to remove limpers. When we get a call about whether or not there is a limping elk, we respond as fast as we possibly can and try to remove the limping elk. And we are also increasing accurate information on the ground. One of the things that we've experienced is that it is a small town. You know, the Skagit's kind of it's a small place, and once an idea sort of hits the ground, it spreads like wildfire, even if the idea is not necessarily accurate. So we have developed some handouts that we're trying to sort of put out into the community accurate information. The other thing that I want to talk a little bit about is the community itself. Many in the Skagit community love the elk. We have property owners purchasing large tracts of land expressly for elk and closing them for hunting. This creates refugias in this conflict area, which is going to be a challenge moving forward. We have a very active land trust that has closed lands to elk hunting. Seattle City Light is purchasing land and managing for elk. They're restoring habitat. They're also allowing hunters on their property. And many property owners are very concerned that DFW is killing too many elk or killing elk at all. When we put out our harvest season, I received significant numbers of phone calls about please don't kill our elk. I would say one of the constants in the community is that everyone is concerned with hoof disease, and that's a place where there is a lot of consensus that we need to address it quickly and remove those elk. So sort of a summary of where we're at right now in the valley floor is that the elk herd on the valley floor is continuing to grow. Our priority in terms of damage and in addressing landowner concerns are to focus on the small dairies and the small ranches. We really see those two communities, those property owners, as experiencing probably the most, not necessarily the most serious harm, but harm that we need to address, because they are they're small businesses that are working on fine margins, and one of our priorities, of course, is keeping the working landscape working. We are very close to the elk population objective, and so we need to manage elk impacts on the valley floor in a way that works for our co-managers and meets the needs of agriculture. And that, if you take away anything from this conversation, that is the North Star that everyone on this team is working on, is that managing the elk impacts on the valley floor in a way that works for co-managers and meets the needs of agriculture. So with that, I want to just talk about what we're doing right now, some of our emerging efforts. So one of the things that we're moving into in the next couple of weeks and in the next few months is a targeted combined approach of hazing and hunting in problem areas. We have, over the last 3 years with the damage permits, it's a little bit like we're sprinkling impacts to the elk throughout the conflict area. And what science has told us is that we need to actually be far more concentrated in our response to change the behavior of the elk themselves and reinstill an ecology of fear in the animals. So we're going to begin working with the tribes on this in March. We're going to hit a couple of different of the subgroups with this combined approach to learn about what that looks like and what it means in terms of how they move, whether or not we're increasing impacts to ag. We're also improving science information and communication. For instance, the Swinomish tribe, the Upper Skagit tribe in Lummi, obtained about $75,000 from the Western Washington Treaty Tribal Wildlife Fund, and nearly 45,000 matching funds offered by the three tribes. The Stillaguamish, the Muckleshoot, and the Tulalip are making similar investments in science and information gathering. There is a shared commitment among the Point Elliot tribes to share information in a more collaborative way than in the past. Collectively, these funds are going to support GPS collaring of elk to increase the precision of our population estimates. We're going to be doing, well, we aren't, but the tribes will be working on helicopter captures and a shared database. the creation of the shared database is going to be particularly helpful. We're looking to the legislature, hoping they're going to be able to provide us some increased tools. In particular, managed pasture would be language that would be in our damage compensation, which would allow us to work more closely with the small ranchers and the small dairies. And it would also remove the assessor's fee, which I think would be really helpful to the ag folks. We're interested in exploring a hay bank. We're working with WashDOT, trying to get them to put more signage out, and we are, of course, developing outreach materials. So that is the short story. I don't know, maybe it counts as a long story, but I'm available for questions.
Okay, does anybody have any questions or comments for Amy?
This is Commissioner Carpenter.
Commissioner Carpenter, Chair Carpenter.
I had a sit down with a couple of farmers yesterday at their request, and as Amy knows very well, the frustration level is growing. Amy probably knows it far better than I deal with it. Brad's dealt with it, had visits and meetings and tours and so on. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that I guess the one question I have and is the coexistence of a viable agricultural area and that abundance of elk, how well that can go forward, and at what cost to whom. I'm struggling to try and help contribute some ideas on a solution, but I got to tell you, the more I dig into this and talk to different people, the less I think I really have a grasp of that.
Commissioner Carpenter, this is Mick. Mind if I provide a little comment on that?
Sure, please do.
I think that the agency shares frustration. I think that we've been working really hard with co-managers. The co-manager component of this is pretty important and adds a lot of complication to the world. I think that if this were a different place on the map in the state of Washington, solutions and actions may be a little different. We've got some other parts of the state, like for instance over by the town of Thorpe, where we have ag damage issues and elk highway conflict and that kind of thing, and we are in a mode of really reducing that herd substantially, and in some places don't even really want elk in an area. But those aren't really options for us. With co-management in that valley, in the North Cascade elk herd in general, the tribes have been very, very clear about their value for the elk herd in general. It's part of their kind of life and history. On top of that, with that concern, they've also been very helpful. They've helped us get some of the highest priority areas with some fencing on it, and they, as Amy mentioned a little while ago, are contributing to helping us this more and more as we continue to coordinate more. But together, it's a challenging situation that we can't just kind of go in and say we're going to take this herd of 400 and make it 100 in over the next 12 months kind of thing. I think ultimately the North Star that Amy mentioned is the piece that we all kind of need to focus on, is to reduce the ag impacts but also maintain the herd health and the herd for multiple uses. And I think we've got some actions that we're trying to put in place now that we haven't ever done before. I think, and you know, I think maybe Amy mentioned that several years ago we actually did go in and remove like 124 elk in one season, and that caused us. That's still causing us problems with our tribal relations.
And with the rest of the community.
And with the rest of the community that loves the elk, and that's like 9 years ago. We've got to kind of be smarter about it. We've got to be more targeted about it. And I think we've tried to put together some plans to do that and working cooperatively with the tribes. It just is not something that we got here overnight with, and I don't think we're going to get out of it overnight.
No, I appreciate that, Mick. I want to make sure that I express my view of the effort that the staff has put forward. I mean, it's been huge, and it is appreciated. And I've seen a lot of the work and talked to people, and I think that's been very, very positive. All I was bringing up is this is kind of a moving target, and the dialogue between the agricultural people and some of the legislators and so on that makes it better but makes it worse in some ways, trying to get your arms around it. So I just want to thank you for what you've done, and I hope we can improve the situation going forward for everyone and the elk.
And thank you for that, Commissioner. I think it's been, we really appreciate that, and we've really appreciated the support of the commissioners in having those conversations. I know they're difficult. I've really appreciated the help that Amy has provided and the leadership that she's provided working with the legislators, and thank you, Director, for attending the meeting up there and being available to those folks and listening. All of that helps.
Yeah, Barbara, this is Brad.
Go ahead, Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, Mick, you were very diplomatic in your response, and Amy, your explanation of the history was very thorough, and I go along with Commissioner Carpenter on this, that having been involved in a number of the meetings, there is no simple answer to this issue. This is probably one of the more complex ones in terms of various partners and various treaties and various histories and emotions that it's out there, especially with the growing number of the people in the community that want elk. I mean, you know, that's that are moving into the community. So it is a moving target, and it's one that I think we have to keep our eye on. But I really do appreciate, and I know I speak for all of us, that what the staff has done in this, and I've witnessed it. So for those out in the world that say we're not doing anything, I find that inaccurate and basically a cheap shot, because we are doing a lot, and there's just no easy overnight answer, and that's the reality.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Go ahead, Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Amy, and the update, and of course all the work that you've been doing. You know, the growing level of frustration that we're hearing, Commissioner Carpenter referenced, and also that we've witnessed at commission meetings, the data, though, that you presented as far as the complaints, incidents, as you pointed out, has been fairly stable. In fact, there is a decrease in the number of complaints from 2017 to 2018. So I guess my question is there some level of people just saying, hey, well, it doesn't do me any good to call in a complaint, nothing happens? Do you think there's any aspect of that too that might explain the decrease? It just doesn't line up with the level of frustration and complaints that we've been hearing.
Yeah, I do think there's a level of frustration that has led to a certain amount of resignation. One of the challenges out there is that not everybody is eligible for for the same level of support from the agency, because they may not have agricultural land or agricultural place. And so some of the frustration is coming from folks that we don't have great tools to help, or they fall outside sort of that priority of working with the small ranchers and the small dairies. The piece that I do find sort of, and I don't know how to make sense of it either, when people call us looking for help, we do respond pretty quickly. I mean, Scott is out there, our conflict specialist, and he has now full-time help with him. They're building fences, they're hazing elk, they're harvesting elk if need be. I mean, they are quick to respond, and they do respond. So the concern from the community that I do hear is that we don't want to call anymore because we're not getting the response we want. But what I worry is that the response they want is actually for us to go out and cull the herd, which is not something that really is part of the tool in our toolbox. But we are pretty good at working from property to respond to people. And so a lot of folks, you know, now have fences around their property, and so they're not calling. That helps a lot. You know, I don't really know how to make sense of it either. And when we continue to increase the number of damage permits and really make them available for people, and we don't see people harvesting more, we don't quite know how to make sense of that either.
Yeah, good. And one other question, if I may. Thanks for that. You know, we also heard a lot of testimony about the increase in the number of elk versus motor vehicle incidents on Highway 20. Is there any data from DOT or from the department that tracks that? I mean, I think that would be another interesting piece of information to really kind of quantitatively assess the degree of the increase of the elk population on the valley floor.
Yeah.
There was another elk vehicle fatality yesterday, for what that's worth.
An elk fatality, I'm assuming?
Yeah, elk fatality, not the vehicle. My apologies.
Thank you.
So we don't have great data on the motor vehicle collisions. The data we do have does not... A couple of pieces. One is it doesn't show increasing amounts of accidents. It's not great data, though. I will say that. When we talk to DOT about this stretch of highway, it's just not a... They don't perceive it as particularly dangerous, and it's not a priority on their list. They have looked at different things they could do out there. We've been leaning on them. I do think that this is an area where we need some political support to get DOT to pay attention to this issue, because it does not rise to the level of a priority for them, but it is a priority for us, and how to get them to share our priority, we haven't gotten them there yet, so we might need some political help with that.
Okay, thanks.
Amy, this is Commissioner Carpenter. Have you had any feedback from the Highway Patrol and or the Skagit County Sheriff's Department about that issue?
You know, we haven't gotten good information from, it's very anecdotal. You know, people have personal experiences, their neighbor almost ran over an elk kind of thing, but we don't have good data. And you know, with the salvage laws, they disappear very quickly. So it's not like they're sitting on the highway for us to count either.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Chair Baker, or Vice Chair Baker. Let me say just a few things, and then I'll end with a question. So this agenda item is in response to the January meeting, where, as Commissioner Kehoe mentioned, we got a large volume of public input that the problem over the course of the most recent winter continues to be pretty severe. And it was kind of compelling to hear from the county commissioner about the number of sheriff cars that have been involved in crashes with elk. At that point in time, there was a discussion about trying to do something that has some tangible results so that a year from now, we can have some measurement of success. We've got a elk management plan that was involved in the proviso, and to have a look at it here, it came out in August of 2018, and had an update in September of 2018, and it has one good example in there, a specific goal that does have something that you might be able to measure a year later and see whether there's been success or not. I think goal number four says, minimize the public safety risk by reducing the average annual number of elk vehicle collisions on State Route 20 between Cedar Woolley and Marble Mount by 50% over the next 5 years. Now, that's over the next 5 years, but it is a something in a plan that you could, I guess you just mentioned some counting problems about, how do you count all these things, but some people are counting them. The county commissioner was counting them, at least for the sheriff's vehicles. So I would say that that's an example of something that could be a tangible goal that if people want to come back in January of 2020 and say that things are getting worse, that we'd have something to look back on. And there's been some good things just reported in the report here. In particular, when you talked about things that you're doing right now, this hazing and hunting in a manner that's trying to change the behavior of the elk. It's very attractive to me as something that could be a good solution. It kind of reminds me of the discussion that we had about pinnipeds at the Fish Committee meeting the last go-around. Having these animals learn, he called it an ecology of fear, but at any rate, having them learn where it's a dangerous place to be and getting them out of there, that sounds like a pretty good goal. It's not a quantitative goal yet, but that's something positive. When you listed off the number of damage permits issued to landowners, it showed that things are some action there. Going from 40 to 52 to 60 means that's responsive. I think that's something that the landowners should say is progress. Now, what we heard from them in January is that when they call somebody to come in and do something, they're on vacation to Mexico or whatever, and it's not really working out like intended. But we can learn from the past on all that. In January, we talked about the possibility of doing something quantitative in a specific goal for the numbers of elk in the problem area. And I know your survey is for areas outside. Your survey area does not include the problem area, or at least all of it, as I understand it. And you talked about the number of elk in the problem area growing. And I think that's what's causing a lot of the complaints. But before the commission, and these people are coming to the commission asking for the department to do more than what's written in the plan. And I think that the idea of having something tangible to look at next year is something that would be very hard for somebody to refute is not doing something. So here's my question. The legislature is in session now. They're trying to deal with this. So is it best for us at the commission table to wait for the legislature to see what they're doing and not try to wrestle with something that would be a tangible measure, a tangible objective that we can look at next January and have some sort of measurement as to achieving success for the goal of reducing damage in the area? Should we just wait for that? And if we do, when is the end of that going to be?
So I don't think we can wait on the legislature. Based on the meeting that we had up there with a number of legislatures, there was a bill being crafted, and a decision was made not to continue on with that bill. So as far as I know, there's nothing actively going on. That said, there may be some opportunities through budget, through proviso, to help us do some of these things, but there's not going to be, I don't think we can count on a legislative fix. We can look for legislative help.
There's a damage piece that'll help a little bit, but it's true. There was a pilot bill that was sort of a basket of all our best ideas that did not advance.
Right.
A smaller bill that speaks to the managed pasture and changing the assessor's fee I don't know if it has been executed. I'm not sure where it's at. Yesterday.
That's House Bill 1875 is the number on that. If folks want to check it out, but it's moving out of the House committee. I don't know if it's been exec, but it's going to.
I think it's supposed to today, I okay. think.
But that is not, Commissioner McIsaac, this is Mick. You know, that particular bill is really focused at compensation and how we go about doing that bit of business. It's not a management approach, which is the other bill that Amy was talking about had some more guidance about that and some more resources, which is really needed if we're going to increase some of those things. But the tangible, the number piece, the number of animals on the valley floor is the, like, that is the sticking point with tribal co-management discussion. I think that if you were to I think the agency is, you know, would be interested in doing more than what we have, but we also recognize our co-management obligations, and so we're trying to work through that stuff.
The number is often slippery, just so you know, because the numbers, setting a numeric target on the valley floor is tricky because when you counted is really important, and the elk are moving back and forth and around. And so you could set a number target and actually not harvest really anything, and it could be a completely different number the next year. I mean, we're looking for sort of longer term trends because of when and how the elk move around. So in terms of numeric targets, it might make more sense to look at complaints or qualitative result of this new approach that we're going to try, though those might be better ways to document change.
Well, if the legislature is not something we should wait for, I guess I would encourage you guys to think about this and take a look at something that could be tangible. I know in January we talked about the recruitment level of at least having some number associated with the recruitment level in the valley floor area. And I don't know if that's the right one or not. But in the end, and of course we've got to learn from the lessons of, 9 years ago that you mentioned, and of course we've got to do our co-management due diligence. But co-management is co-management. It's not singular management. So we need to remember the co-part of all of it as well. So I guess I would encourage you to think then about some sort of tangible thing that could be a measurement of success. Maybe this is a little bit of the scientist in me coming out. But what we heard from those folks is there's a lot of process and a lot of words, but not much that they feel changes the picture that the elk damage situation is getting worse. It's not even stabilizing. And so I guess that's what and writing something down is a first step in the co-management process that you can bring to the tribes and say, what about this? And, you know, we've got something here for vehicle collisions, but really the target here, as you said, is we need fewer elk in the area. And if that's the objective, how do you measure whether or not you're going to have success at that?
Mr. McIsaac, I think in our legislative type meeting we had up there all day, there was, I thought, general consensus, and I have to fully admit not everybody bought into this, but numbers are a surrogate, numbers of elk, and what we really need to manage is damage, not elk. If we could somehow have the same elk but no damage, we win. If we have more elk or fewer elk and more damage, we lose. It's really about that damage, and that's what I think inspires this more strategic of which elk are causing the most damage, which are those habituated groups, are there better ways of managing them through removal and harassment so that they become less habituated, because they're the ones that just go into one of the reserves that some of the elk people who like elk create and then come out at night and damage the land. Can we make it an uncomfortable place for them to live? I think that's the more strategic approach than just the simple how many elk are there approach.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with that. I mean, it's the same situation as we talked about for pinnipeds. If the elk can think that this is a dangerous place to be and they avoid it, then the problem's solved with, with a minimal amount of elk removal. And that helps increase the herd in the areas of the target zone as well. So similarly to the pinniped thing, it's not an idea of trying to see about culling numbers. It's about changing behavior and making and addressing the real problem. So I agree with what you just said.
So we still have
Commissioner Grable.
Go ahead, Commissioner Grable.
Again, on the issue of public safety, I just wanted to mention that over in our region, DOT helped a local organization, Wenatchee Sportsmen's Association, construct fencing that's, I would say it's at least 8 miles long, to prevent bighorn sheep from getting onto Highway 97A. And I believe DOT funded that project. And that might be something to look into, the justification for that. You know, what got DOT's attention for them to execute that project? Because it sounds like there's similar issues here. And you may be able to learn something from how that was approached. And they did accomplish a significant fencing project on the Highway 97A. For bighorn sheep.
Yeah, Barbara, Brad, just to follow up, also by Squim, I think a lot of people know that. I mean, that's a pretty traveled road. There's blinking lights when elk are present. And I'm sure DOT's looked at this one over here as well. And I don't know if that's because of certain ones that are collared trigger these lights, but when you're heading into Port Angeles, I think a lot of you know what I'm talking about. You see these signs that when the lights are blinking, elk are present.
So this is Commissioner Baker. Commissioner Thorburn, I have a question for you. There's obviously a lot of interest in this issue and kind of keeping updated on it. May we put this again on the Wildlife Committee's agenda in the next, well, sometime soonish? Does that seem like something a good place to follow up with some of these questions?
It's certainly fine with me if the other commissioners would sort of like to delegate it to the Wildlife Committee and we can report it out.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, thank you. I think that's a fine idea. However, I think it's important.
Okay, Commissioner McIsaac, at least I'm losing you. But let's move this along because we still have Willapod to go. Could you repeat what you just said?
Can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I think delegating to the Wildlife Committee is a good idea. However, I do think it's important that the staff prepare some sort of a written plan that does wrestle with this question about something we can show people that is a plan different than the generalized things that we have written up last fall and last summer, that does get to some of this hazing and hunting business. I don't know where that's in writing. Maybe it is somewhere already. But anyway, some sort of consideration of quantitative goals, if it's not numbers of elk, if it's numbers of damage permit or something in writing so that we can try to measure success or not a year from now. And if that gets wrestled out in the Wildlife Committee, that would be an excellent way to go. But I do think it's important that we have something tangible to look at that is something different than what we have now in writing.
Well, it sounds to me like the suggestion is moving from a suggestion to a blue sheet. And what I'd like to do is ask that we discuss that in the Wildlife Committee and move on from there. You know, we're not going to fix this in the next few weeks. So if that's okay with people, I think we need to move on to Willapod Bay. Is that an okay resolution, Commissioner McIsaac?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Just to keeping the process going and having something in writing, and if that comes out via blue sheet within the Wildlife Committee, it accomplishes that goal. Yes.
All right. Is there anything further on elk then?
Hearing none. Oh, I'm sorry. There was something.
I didn't let you go with none. I was just going to offer that I have had some hallway discussions with Secretary Millar, and I will schedule an appointment with him to see if there's any way that we can elevate this in DOT's priorities. That was going to be accomplished by the pilot bill that didn't go anywhere, so I will follow up on that.
Well, that sounds like that would meet the objectives of at least two or three of our commissioners who have stated that on this call. So thank you very much for that.